You are Locked On Colts, your daily Indianapolis Colts podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back into your latest episode of Locked On Colts, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today's always your host, Evan Sedra, and Joe Myers. We'll discuss today's episode and recap the Colts' thoroughly dominant performance against the Minnesota Vikings, which came, honestly, as a surprise to me after how they played week one. Zach Hicks of Stampede Blue is here to talk through that 28-11 win for the Colts over the Vikings. How are you doing today, Zach?
Pretty good, man. Definitely better than last week, talking about a Colts victory here. Not only just a Colts victory, I mean, this was a very dominant win. So it's really nice to come off of a Sunday where the Colts look like they just did.
Yeah, let's talk first through, all the takeaways from this game, and there's plenty of them, Zach. And let's start off first with this defense who really bounced back well after a disappointing performance against the Jaguars where they allowed Gardner Minshew to tear them up. This time around, though, Kirk Cousins had arguably one of the worst games of his career, 11 of 26 for 113 yards with three interceptions. He was sacked three times, finished with a QBR of 9.3. What was your reaction to just them really flipping the script, unlike the week before against Gardner Minshew, where the Colts were able to constantly get pressure on Cousins with DeForest Buckner, Just Houston, and also the secondary really stepped up even with injuries on them?
Yeah, honestly, I just think it was a big turnaround in terms of the players just going out there and performing. And we've seen this a lot under Coach Reich. I think I put out a stat last week. I think we talked about it for like a second on the last podcast. But the Colts are 6-1, now 7-1. Coming off of a loss to a team that would eventually finish less under 500 under Coach Reich. Who knows if the Jaguars are going to finish that low, but obviously what we're assuming before the year they would finish below 500. The Colts usually do bounce back really well from these games, and the Colts defense typically plays really well too. I mean, before this one, they were only giving up 16 points per game in those games after those bad losses. So the defense responded really well, and it honestly wasn't too much of a schematic change. The corners played a little closer to the line of scrimmage. There was a little bit more man coverage overall. But, for the most part, they still dropped into their cover two for most of the game. They still did a lot of what they normally do. The players just stepped up. DeForest Buckner looked, in week one he didn't look bad. He looked pretty good. But he went from pretty good in week one to looking like the elite defensive presence he is. A lot of other guys like Grover Stewart really bounced back. Justin Houston had a good game as well. But honestly, it really comes down to the secondary. The secondary just had an outstanding game. TJ Carey filled in really well on the outside for Rocky Sin. Xavier Rhodes had a really good bounce back game. Carr Willis bounced back really well. And the rookie Julian Blackman. Sorry, I always get that mixed up. But Julian Blackman had a great opening game for him here in week two. So yeah, the secondary looked great. They really bounced back from what was a very lackluster first game, and the defensive line really came to play, and they really got after Cousins. So just props to the players for recognizing that they did not play up to what they could play in that week one game, and turning it around here in week two.
Speaking of that D-line, Zach, specifically DeForest Buckner, who had three tackles, 1.5 for loss, 1.5 sacks as well, 4 QB hits as well. A dominant performance from Buckner in week two against his Vikings offensive line. And that viral clip of him just tossing that right guard aside, I think it was Drew Samia, like he was a ragdoll out there, and getting Kirk Cousins on that hit. It's really surprising to me just how the Vikings couldn't stop him. Maybe it's not that surprising because you paid DeForest Buckner all that money. He's a dominant force you saw all throughout his career in San Francisco. This is kind of the first real game where Buckner really couldn't be stopped from all facets, and he looked like the player the Colts paid up heavy for.
Yeah, again, week one, it wasn't a bad performance by any means. I know a lot of people were kind of ragging on him a little bit. I did hear some people, especially even in the comments to me on Twitter and stuff, going as far as saying the Haynesworth comments if he doesn't produce, which, after week one, it's obviously a little crazy to even bring up that reference whatsoever. But in week one, it wasn't a bad game. He had 6 tackles. He had 2 tackles for a loss, or at least 1 tackle for a loss, a couple that were near the line of scrimmage, so a couple stops. And it wasn't really a bad game whatsoever. It's just the Jaguars had such a quick passing game that he really wasn't able to get there as a pass rusher. Go here to week two, the Colts changed a little bit in the secondary. The secondary played a little bit better, and he was able to kind of, get his feet under him and get after the passer. So he had a great game overall, and he's had a lot of success against the Vikings throughout his career. I think he had 4.5 sacks in the last two meetings combined against the Vikings, and quite a few quarterback hits as well. So this is a team that he has traditionally played really well against. He actually had 3 sacks against them, I think, in the 2017 opening game or 2018 opening game. I think this was the perfect game for him to really get his legs under him for this young season and really establish himself as a dominant defensive tackle. And, you know, 1.5 sacks, a safety, I think 4 quarterback hits. I mean, that's one way to really let the rest of the AFC South and, you know, overall the whole league kind of know that, you know, you're a dominant presence on this line. So it was really good to see him come out and establish himself as that elite presence that the Colts paid and traded for.
Flipping over to the offensive side for a moment here, before you tap into some injuries, the Colts sustained 2 massive ones here on Sunday against this Vikings team. Jonathan Taylor, surprising enough to me, I know he was expecting a heavier workload, Marlon Mack being out for the year with torn Achilles after week 1, but pretty surprising to me how much of a workload he actually did carry, 28 total touches for 110 yards, including 26 carries for 101 yards and a touchdown. It seems like to me, Zach, all indications are Jonathan Taylor's going to be the workhorse of this offense now.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be the guy. There's going to be some weeks where, you know, Jordan Wilkins is going to get a good amount of carries. I mean, he got 9 in this one, but that was a lot of in garbage time towards the end of the game. But there'll be some games where Wilkins gets 10 and 15 carries as well. There's going to be some games where Nyheim Hines gets, you know, 15 touches like he did in week 1. So it's going to change every single week. I just think this week was the week that Frank Reich wanted to say, like, look, in week 1, we put on a lot of film that we're going to be a passing team. Let's completely change it up here against the Vikings. And honestly, the Vikings front 4, their front 3, whatever they run, I think they run 3-4. So it'd be like their front 3 or 4. You know, their front's really not that good at stopping the run. They kind of lost a lot of the guys that they had with Linval Joseph and Everson Griffin and Daniil Hunter's out too. So they lost a lot of that talent up front. And I think the Colts just acknowledged that weakness and they wanted to just run some power run game right at them. So I think it really worked out, the game plan. I think Jonathan Taylor had a pretty good game. I think he probably could have had a few more yards here and there. There was a couple holes that he missed throughout the game. But overall, I think it was a really good start for him, and I think it's a promising start to a young career, and I think it's only going to get better from here. But, you know, I don't want to come out and say that the Colts' identity is to be this power run game, even though Frank Reich wants everybody to believe that. You know, there's always going to be games where it's going to be throwing the ball a lot, and there's going to be games where the running game's not working. But I think the Colts are trying to be a really balanced team, and they want to have some games where they're very heavy with the run, some games where they're very heavy with the pass. And I think this was just one of those ones where they relied on that ground game, and Jonathan Taylor did everything he could to get some positive yards. So good performance from the rookie. I think he has some more in him, and he has some development to do. But overall, again, just a really good start for a young career.
Speaking of that running back duo now, Jonathan Taylor and Jordan Wilkins, with Marlon Mack now being out for the year, I tweeted this after the game, Zach, and after going back and watching a little bit more of it, I totally agree with what I said, and that's I just feel really confident with Jonathan Taylor and Jordan Wilkins as the 1-2 punch moving forward, do you?
Oh, yeah, especially behind this offensive line. I mean, you got, you know, with Marlon Mack and Jonathan Taylor, you had 2 really, really explosive backs, and when you substitute Mack out for a guy like Wilkins, you know, you're not going to have as much explosiveness with that second back. But what you're going to have is a guy who is always going to get positive yards. I mean, we saw it the other day. He had 9 carries for 40 yards, I believe, over 4 yards a carry again. Leads the whole NFL in yards per carry with a minimum of 100 carries over the last 2 seasons. He's just a really good back. I mean, he's not going to be this guy who's going to break off huge runs. Even though we've seen him break off huge runs, he's not going to be this walking highlight reel. But he's always going to fall forward. He's always going to get those positive yards. And I think that's very valuable to player to have with Jonathan Taylor, where Taylor is your bruising back. He's going to keep hitting you. He's going to keep hitting you, and he's going to eventually break off that big run. I think Wilkins is kind of like a million paper cuts, where he's just going to keep getting you at 4 or 5 yards of carry. He's just going to keep moving those sticks, and I think that's a very valuable player to have. You know, personally, if it were me, I think I would probably run Wilkins a little bit more early in the game and tire out the defense trying to stop a guy who's going to always fall forward and get those positive yards. And then I bring out a guy like Taylor kind of towards the middle and in later parts of the game so he can use his power and his speed to kind of wear out an already worn down defense. But, you know, whatever they're going to really do with this running back duo, I really like what they bring. And then also Nyheim Hines, what he's going to do at the end of quarters and in the passing game. So, yeah, I feel really confident with this trio. Obviously, it would have been a lot better with Marlon Mack, who – looked like he was going to have another outstanding season the way he started off week 1. But, you know, these 3 guys, they're all really good, capable backs in this league, and I think they're only getting better. So, yeah, I feel really, really confident with Taylor, Wilkins, and also Hines in there.
Help support your local businesses, whether they're your corner stores, coffee spots, or favorite shops. Local businesses have always been on your team, supporting you and your community. But right now, more than ever, local businesses need our support, so let's be there for them. The next time you go shopping, make the choice to shop at local businesses and look for the contactless symbol and tap to pay with a contactless Visa to help support your community. Because where and how you shop matters. Visa, everywhere you want to be. An official partner of the NFL. Let's go on your guy now, Zach, Mo Alie-Cox, who you hyped up throughout the week here, and I think on this podcast as well, that if Jack Doyle didn't play, expect a big game from Mo Alie-Cox, and he certainly delivered that. 5 receptions, 111 yards. He did drop one pass late to an interception for Philip Rivers, but he really redeemed himself the rest of the way. The rest of his targets, he ended up getting 22 yards per reception. Moving forward here, Zach, I mean, you have to imagine Philip Rivers after seeing this game, and especially after rewatching it on tape, I imagine, he's going to be wanting to get Mo Alie-Cox the ball more and more often.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, I wasn't too concerned whatsoever about the Colts tight end depth chart going into this game, even with their top two guys out in Jack Doyle and Trey Burton, just because I've been that high on Mo Alie-Cox for the last two seasons. I mean, at his base, he's an outstanding run blocker and just an overall really reliable presence in that department. But, you know, I thought he always had the potential to be a really good pass catcher, and we saw a lot of that potential in 2018 with Andrew Luck. I mean, he made a couple really nice catches down the field. Obviously, the one-handed catch against Oakland. He had one that he ran through contact against Tennessee, and also one where he jumped over Jamal Adams against the Jets. So, you know, the potential was always there for him to be a really good pass-catching tight end. It really just came down to targets. He really hadn't got many targets up to this point. I mean, last year he only had 90 yards all of last season, and this year we saw him with 111 yards in this one game alone. So I think he just needs to get more playing time and stay out there and get more targets from Phillip Rivers. And honestly, if it were up to me, I know it's not, and I know Jack Doyle will probably take over tight end one when he gets back, but I would have Mo Alie-Cox kind of as the number one tight end the rest of the way, and that's not really just based off this one game. It's based off of, again, I think that he's pretty similar to Jack Doyle in terms of blocking. You know, obviously they're very different blockers, but I think where he separates is he just has more potential than Doyle down the field. Doyle still would play no matter what. I mean, Doyle's going to get out there. He's going to still play, you know, 50-60% of snaps if Alie-Cox were the starter. But, I really would start Mo Alie-Cox if I were the Colts going forward, even when Doyle and Burton come back. But it's going to be interesting to see what they do with those three because, you know, now we've seen Alie-Cox have that breakout game. Doyle obviously has been in the league for 100 years and has been the same player every single season, and Trey Burton can stretch the field a little bit. So, you know, when all three of them are back and they're all healthy, it's going to be really cool to see what they do. But, you know, personally, I'm still riding this Mo Alie-Cox hype train. I think they just keep getting the ball. He has some potential to be really special in this league.
Definitely agree with you there. I think moving forward here, I expect Phil Burns to keep targeting Mo Alie-Cox. And once Burton and Doyle are back, I do wonder how the splits are going to be as far as snaps go. But I feel like Alie-Cox is kind of the best of both worlds with Doyle and Burton. Burton's a great receiving tight end. So is Jack Doyle as a blocker and a receiver. But Alie-Cox offers that explosiveness, that great blocking ability as well. I feel like he's a player now moving forward that, especially the next couple of weeks, if Doyle and Burton remain out, I think Doyle's probably going to be a multi-week injury. They have worked out hell henches a couple days ago, Zach. I really do think that they could be in for another big game here on Sunday against this porous Jets secondary. And if this continues, I really think Alie-Cox can be one of my favorite players to watch the rest of the season, and I imagine for you as well, Zach. But let's move on here into Phillip Rivers, who once again had a very efficient game against this Vikings defense. Only 19 of 25 for 214 yards. The one interception, like I mentioned, wasn't on him. Just a really great performance, and won't show in the box score once again for Rivers, but the type of game where I feel like moving forward here, Rivers could be – this type of game is really what's kind of in Phillip Rivers' wheelhouse for this offense.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it was a very solid game. You know, it wasn't anything special. He did drop a really, really nice pass to T.Y. Hilton that if Hilton were to make that catch, his stat line would look just a lot better. And also, you know, Mo Alie-Cox would have made his catch in the red zone. Then obviously Phillip Rivers would have had an outstanding day. But overall, I think it was really solid. You know, the Colts only punted twice on the day. They've only punted twice this entire year. And even in a run-heavy game plan, Rivers has shown the ability to make the plays when he needs to and get them out of holes on third down. So, I really like what he did. I think we're seeing a lot of really good aggressiveness from him. Again, he took that deep shot to Hilton and really made a nice throw on that one. But also on those corner out routes to Mo Alie-Cox down the field, and even on the one where Alie-Cox was double covered, he kind of threw it up and trusted his young tight end. I just think he made a lot of nice throws, and he really balanced being aggressive along with taking the safe route and trying to get those first downs. So so far through two games, I think Rivers has been everything that we've kind of expected, and that's been good enough to put them in a winning position in the first two games. And they probably should have won both these games with the way he's played. So I'm very happy with the way Phillip Rivers has played so far, and I think the Colts are too.
Let's hit on these injuries now, Zach. Really big blows for this team, especially Paris Campbell. We're going to hit on first, then Malik Hooker after that, who Hooker was officially announced today. He's out for the year with a torn Achilles, the exact same injury that sidelined Marlon Mack for the rest of the year in week one. But Paris Campbell, according to Jim Iola of the Indy Star, he's heard that it's a sprained PCL and MCL, and from his source here, it's unlikely Campbell returns the rest of the year. So let's say at minimum Campbell is out till late December or maybe into the playoffs, Zach. What would you do here to replace Paris Campbell's production? Because on that play, very unfortunate what happened to Campbell getting hit in the knee by Harrison Smith on that tackle.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, you're not really going to replace what he can do for this offense just because he's the fastest player on the offense. He can stretch the field the most. He's really good on those gadget plays and getting the ball in space. And also his ability just after the catch and after he has the ball in his hand is probably not matched by anyone in this offense. So it's really unfortunate. I think he was on his way to a breakout season. And it was going to be a really big piece for this team going forward. But that all gets put on pause yet again after another big injury. But I would say probably what the Colts are going to do going forward to replace his presence in the slot is it's probably gonna be a combination thing. It's going to be kind of by committee. I think we'll see a lot of T.Y. Hilton in the slot, where he's been very efficient over the last couple of years from the slot position. I think we'll see Michael Pittman Jr. playing some of that big slot role. And you know, he's a very smooth player for how big he is. So I think he can operate really well in the slot. But we'll also see guys like Zach Pascal will be in there, and because he's so reliable, and he can pretty much play any wide receiver spot for the Colts. And I think we'll also see a little bit of Nyheim Hines in there too. I mean, Nyheim Hines, they love doing the little gadget plays with him, and that they've kind of done with Paris Campbell. And you know, he was a former receiver in college, played a little bit in college before he moved to running back, and also he has played a little receiver and split out wide a little bit for the Colts as well. So I think it's going to be much of a committee approach. I don't really think they can really match what Campbell could bring for this offense, but you know, they have the depth this year to kind of deal with it. You know, Michael Pittman Jr. is here, Zach Pascal's here, Darius Fountain's healthy, Desmond Patman, when he's fully healthy again, they'll be pretty set at receiver. So it's very unfortunate. You know, I do think it does hurt this offense quite a bit, but I don't think it's really a backbreaker in terms of injuries. I think they can still be an efficient offense, and they do still have some decent weapons outside to kind of replace him. But yeah, it definitely sucks. He was well on his way to a big season, and the Colts are really going to get him involved. And it was just a freak injury on a freak hit. You hate to see it, but it's just kind of part of the game.
Yeah, exactly. Looking at Paris Campbell's injury history the last 13 months, I can't imagine a player has been through this kind of bad luck so far to start his career in the NFL. Hamstring pull, he set the majority of his rookie training camp. The sports hernia, he missed 3 games. Fractured hand, 4 games. Broken foot, the final 3 games of last year. Concussion due to a car accident to start off training camp this year. He missed a couple practices. And now this sprained MCL, PCL injury that might come out for the rest of the year. I don't think it's fair to say Paris Campbell's injury prone, Zach, because these are just freak injuries that keep happening to him. But just an unfortunate break for such a talented player the Colts invested a lot in.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, we've seen guys come back from a lot of freak injuries in their careers. I mean, Frank Gore came back from 2 ACL injuries in college to have a great NFL career. But, you know, with every bit of time that he misses, with every major injury he has, and that can potentially take away his explosiveness, his potential in the NFL really goes down, and his ability to really produce in this league. Because, you know, we always say the best ability is availability. And unfortunately, freak injury or not, Campbell really hasn't been available for this team, unfortunately. So I hope he's able to come back stronger than what he was, and he's able to produce going forward. But it's going to be hard for the team to kind of count on him to be what they were expecting him to be this year and last year as well. So if the Colts were to, you know, draft a new speedster in this draft or sign one in the offseason, it wouldn't shock me whatsoever, just because unfortunately you can't really rely on Campbell with that injury history. And again, it really sucks. I mean, he's a super talented player. Looked like he was going to break out this year from the way he played in week one. But, you know, these injuries, they just suck. They really do suck. It's the worst part about the NFL. And I know he's frustrated right now after everything he went through last year. But, you know, hopefully he can come back again and be as good as he started this year, next year.
Built Bar, the best-tasting protein bar ever, is back, Colts fans. They have 18 amazing flavors and 6 new ones, including caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp, to go along with the 12 original flavors that are oh-so-good. They are soft and easy to chew, and bars are covered in 100% chocolate. The Built Bar is great for the health-conscious guy. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. The bars are low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber, and great for a keto diet. For example, looking over some of these options they have at Built Bar. Now, the coconut almond has 18 grams of protein with 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, and only 5 grams of net carbs. That is a great tasting snack that lasts you all throughout the day, Colts fans. With a free cooler to your next purchase while supplies last, use promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, and get $10 off your next order. Use promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. That is BuiltBar.com, BuiltBar.com. Yeah, really unfortunate what's happened to Paris Campbell so far in his career. And if it's dead silent for the rest of the year, it's going to be a big blow to this Colts offense because they're going to have to somehow replicate that kind of speed. Maybe Nyheim Hines you see more of in a outside slot role, which I really think is a smart idea. Use him in those jet sweeps, those screen passes. I think Hines is more than capable of doing that, but I imagine even more of a run-first approach in store here for this Colts offense without Paris Campbell out there, Zach. But let's hit on now the Malik Hooker injury. He tore his Achilles this week. I don't know exactly what the play was because I haven't been able to see the film of it and what happened with Hooker, but he is officially out for the year for multiple reports. Julian Blackman, though, stepped up really admirably in his place. I think arguably post Malik Hooker ACL injury, Julian Blackman probably a better game than we've ever seen from Malik Hooker before in the last couple of years, which is saying something with the kind of instant impact that he made. But what was your analysis of Hooker missing the rest of the season now, arguably probably his last game ever he played as Indianapolis Colt, and now Julian Blackman stepping into his place arguably as the probably starting free safety the rest of the season?
Yeah, again, just like Paris Campbell, it's just unfortunate. It would be really hard-pressed to find anyone who wasn't super high on Malik Hooker the year he came out. I mean, many people had him as a top 10 pick. Some has him a top 5 guy in that class. I mean, the lowest you probably would have saw him is maybe like a top 20 player in that whole class. So, you know, people were super, super high on him coming out. So I don't even blame Ballard for making that selection because it feels like they had a gift just fall into their lap. But, you know, injuries definitely can derail a career. He had a lot of injuries in college, had the torn ACL his rookie season. He's had a torn MCL here in the NFL. He's had a torn Achilles now. So injuries derail a lot. And honestly, I think when you're looking at him as a whole, he's kind of a player who with the injuries, with scheme changes and such, he really hasn't developed much as a player from his rookie season to now. He's still kind of the same exact player who looks kind of out of place in this scheme. And when you put all that together, you know, you have a guy who's kind of relying on his athleticism and really hasn't developed in terms of the mental aspect of the game because he hasn't seen the field that much. I just think it's unfortunate, and I think it's kind of the end of his era here in Indy. I don't think there's any way he really comes back. He's probably going to want a new change of scenery anyway. But, you know, we kind of move on now to the Julian Blackman era, so to speak, here in Indy. And I think he's going to be a good player for this team. I mean, the Colts have, you know, under Chris Ballard the last couple of years, they've done a really good job of scouting the safety position. I mean, Carr Willis, George Odom, Tavon Wilson, who they just brought in, Mike Mitchell, when they brought him in off the street as well. So they've done a really good job bringing in safeties the last few years, and they've been really, really high on this Julian Blackman guy. And he looked really, really good this week. I mean, he made a really nice play out of cover two that we have rarely seen from Malik Hooker. So, yeah, I think Julian Blackman's going to be a really good fit. I think he's really good in diagnosing routes in that cover two spot and coming downhill and playing physical. But yeah, it's just unfortunate that Malik Hooker's Colts career kind of ends the way it did, and he was never really able to get his legs under him here with the Colts. I mean, tons of talent, just never really developed, and part of that really is due to injury. So it sucks, and hopefully he's able to recover and play well for his next team.
Last point I had to make with you, Zach, for today's episode, looking at the Colts again next week on Sunday, home at 4.05 p.m. Eastern time against this New York Jets team. Looks like it's really down the dumps right now. Adam Gase, we know him as a coach to be very underwhelming. Sam Darnold has no help around him. The offensive line is in shambles. The weapons are not there either. Le'Veon Bell looks over the hill now for the Jets. Frank Gore actually started this past Sunday, the former Colt, at age 37. I looked at the spread last night, Zach. It was 9.5 points. I just checked it again on DraftKings. It's up to 10.5 points as a spread for Sunday at home in Lucas Oil Stadium. So Vegas is expecting a blowout win for the Colts here. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I think people are going to be cautious because that first game against the Jaguars, the Colts were favored by 9.5, and you know, we saw what happened with that one. But, you know, we're 2 weeks into this season. We've kind of seen what the Jets are. The Jets lost to the 49ers by 18 points when the Niners didn't have their starting quarterback, their starting running back, like half their receivers, their whole entire defensive line that made them so dominant. So, you know, this Jets team is really, really bad. I mean, they might be the worst team we've seen since the 0-16 Browns. That's not saying that they can't beat the Colts and the Colts can't lose, but the Colts just got to play their game and they got to play, you know, smart, confident, not turn the ball over, not give up you know, situations that are supposed to be in their favor, like they did against Jacksonville, and they should come away with a pretty big win in this one. I'm not too concerned. I think that they're going to right the ship here, and they're going to look really good against the Jets. But obviously, it's the NFL. Anyone can beat anyone, but it really shouldn't happen this weekend.
Totally agree with you there. I think the Colts should win by double digits. I think they will, honestly. I could see a really high-scoring game for the Colts, and they maybe a repeat performance what we saw this past Sunday against the Minnesota Vikings where they won 28-11. But before I let you go here, Zach, just one final thing for you. How important is it for the Colts to take advantage of these next five games where they play the Jets, the Bears, Mitch Trubisky, the Browns, the Bengals, and the Lions? At minimum, Zach, if they can take advantage of the schedule, they should be 5-2 and sitting pretty atop the AFC South or right near it.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure that – you know, they've kind of looked at it a little bit, and then they're probably thinking that to themselves as well. But, you know, it's kind of their mantra here, that one game at a time. They just got to go slow and take it one game at a time here. But these are very, very winnable games. And when you have the back half of the schedule they have, you know, against the Steelers and the Raiders, I mean, the Raiders aren't a great team, but they look pretty solid. The Steelers, Raiders, Packers, Ravens, you know, that's a lot of tough teams coming up. You got all the divisional games against the Texans and Titans and the Jaguars again. So you got to really take advantage of the weak part of your schedule, and that's what's kind of coming up here for the Colts. So, yeah, they got to be 6-1, 5-2 if they really want to have a chance at the playoffs this year. And I think Frank Reich and the rest of his coaching staff is going to have the team ready after, you know, again, after that poor week one showing. I think that this team's going to come out ready each week. So, you know, hopefully they can come out pretty strong in that window there. But they have a really good chance to take a big lead here in the AFC South and also in the AFC playoff race.
Zach, always enjoy talking with you, man. You guys can go follow him on Twitter at ZachHicks2 and go read his work, as always, over on Stampede Blue. Zach, appreciate the time. Talk to you again next Monday.
Sweet. Sounds good, bud.